So this will happen when we follow the Dharma. The Dharma invites us to aspire to the way things are, invites us to see the truth, invites us to love better and more vividly and more widely and more fully. And we respond, we live the Dharma seriously, fully, not just for ourselves, but with others, for others. We really try to make a contribution to life, not just to our own life, but to everything. We really try to enrich the world. We make merit, we accumulate merit, we develop that positive momentum. It happens. It's fantastic. But of course, you also fail. You do all that, you have all that aspiration, you have all that momentum, and then you fail. Even repeatedly. You know, every morning in your meditation, there's a... well, not every morning, but often there can be a sense of failure. You've drifted off. You've gone absent without leave, you know, in your meditation. You've gone off on fantasies, on distractions, and you end the period of sitting and think, well, what was all that about? You know, why did I bother turning up? Of course, some say this is a problem in itself, you know, that you shouldn't aspire. You shouldn't aspire. You shouldn't try to make effort. That's just sort of ambition. That's willful and all that kind of thing. And you should just be as you are. You're the Buddha already. So, you know, just experience perfection and all that sort of thing. But I remain very sceptical about that sort of approach. I mean, I think that, yes, there's a lot to be said for just sitting and just looking, as in, you know, my emphasis on appreciation. That's very, very important, just stopping, letting go and looking. But I think we shouldn't be disrespectful to people's aspirations, to their very positive aspirations, their attempts to live and lead a better life and to improve life around them, and their aspirations to practice the Dharma. And I think there's a danger if we just dump all that we'll end up with, you know, in rather a passive, self-satisfied sort of state. I'll give you an example of the sort of thing I mean. Many years ago, I was on a solitary retreat, and it was a very difficult solitary retreat. And, you know, there was all sorts of, pain and difficulty. And but at some point, something sort of dropped away, and you know, all the effort sort of seemed to kind of crumble, or rather change its form. I started to experience a much more, sort of joyful effort. And there's a lovely feeling of, you know, wanting to do more meditation. You know, it was a completely different sort of state of being, really. And I felt softer and kinder, more fully aware. And I felt different. And I really wanted to, you know, be like this, you know, from now on, be in this sort of state, you know, kind of be with this state. And I went back to where I was living, to the community and centre that I was in at that time, and I really, you know, tuned up, and, you know, I kind of made an aspiration, oh, this is how I want to be. And, you know, kind of hours after I'd got back, I just happened to have a small exchange with someone, and very quickly we were in an argument, and very quickly I was in a rigid and polarized state. And afterwards I just felt so humiliated, so disappointed, and I felt that I had failed. I didn't beat myself up and said, oh, you know, you evil sinner and all that sort of thing. There was just this sense of failure. I wasn't who I thought I was. Okay, I had that aspiration, and, you know, that was kind of alive in me, but I'd actually fallen down, as it were. And I just had to kind of give up and apologise and confess and soften and move on. But that feeling of humiliation, the sense of disappointment, was very important. It was very important. It would have been no good if somebody had come along and said, no, you're fine. You know, kind of nothing's happened. Something had happened. You know, I'd be like, I'd let myself down. And I'd come back, you know, in that pain of disappointment, humiliation. In a way, things became more real. It's happened so many times in my Dharma life. In my life, someone once asked me, years ago to on one of these retreats here in a question and answer session. We kind of went through this period of, I think I mentioned it in one of the other talks, where you get these questions about basically people wanting to know if you were a stream entrant. And so I got a question, could I please kind of communicate some of my spiritual experiences, kind of an assumption there, some of my insights. And I wasn't going to say anything. I thought, well, you know, these things are often too, you know, personal and too private to talk about. And in any case, I couldn't, at that very moment, I couldn't sort of think of any. And I was just going to dismiss the question. But then I thought, well, no, actually, there are some very, very important, fruitful experiences. And what they were experiences of humiliation. Experiences where I felt really brought down to earth, where the ground I thought I was on, I realised it wasn't there, it was taken away, and I just sank. The ground being my ideas about myself, my ideas about life, my ideas about other people, my ideas about my spiritual state, when that was all just broken up, and I felt humiliated, I felt brought low. Well, it was in those experiences, looking back, I felt, yes, well, I think in those moments there was, if not insight, there's certainly the road to it. The road to it. Experiences of my egotism and conceit being shown up for what it was. Seeing just how mean and self-centred I actually was. How immature I was. How uncooked I was. How kutcha I was, as it's that to use the Hindi word, kutcha means uncooked, therefore hard. Pukka means cooked, therefore soft. Those of you who know this word, pukka, uncooked. And a lot of my experiences of this were in connection with teaching the Dharma. You know, communicating the Dharma to others is a very powerful spiritual practice. We often don't sort of think of it like that. You know, we think of, you know, teaching is, you know, okay, you just pass it on. But it's an extraordinarily powerful practice. That's how it's recognised in Buddhist tradition. Which can have a very powerful effect on it, on you, on the person doing it, if you let it in. And in India, I can remember some very strong experiences, because I used to do loads and loads of, you know, talks and retreats and study groups and so on in India. And one time I was on a tour with my dear friend and interpreter, Bodhi Sen, who is one of the most cheerful and positive men probably on this earth that I've ever encountered. An incredible man, very poor background, very little education. He sort of picked up English because of his desire to communicate with English speak, you know, non-Marathi speaking and non-Hindi speaking order members and Banti, and so that he could translate the Dharma for others. You know, of his sheer sort of joy in the Dharma, he learned English, and he wasn't a sort of incredibly accurate translator, but he really got the spirit of whatever, you know, you were talking about really well. And we were a powerful double act, the two of us, when we were on the road together in Bombay and the country district, especially the coastal strip of Maharashtra, going from village to village. Incredible guy. Anyway, we were on one of these tours, and you know, when you do these lecture tours, it's hard work. I mean, you're on rough country buses, you're going from village to village, you know, you give a long lecture. It's got to be long. It's not, you know, you can't do, you know, you've got to be standing, putting it out for at least an hour and a half, and that's a short lecture. People feel short-changed with that. And you've got to really lay it out and put a lot of energy into it. And we were on this tour doing lecture after lecture after lecture, and one day I was feeling tired. And we were waiting for a bus, and it didn't turn up, hour after hour after hour. And I started to sulk. It's so disgraceful. And I started to take it out on Bodhi Sen. It was awful, you know, sort of, you know, kind of grumpy, and as if it was his fault that the bus was late. And you know, sort of, we shouldn't have come on this tour anyway, you know. And you know, it was really kind of mean-spirited because he's so cheerful and so positive. And then, at a certain point, I can't remember what happened, I suddenly saw what I was doing and I felt so deeply ashamed. So deeply ashamed, of course, and then I remembered what I'd been talking about in my lectures, you know, metta, patience, forgiveness, understanding, and you know, it was a really appalling feeling of being so mean and immature, and, you know, of course, I apologised, and, you know, and he just laughed. He hadn't noticed. you know, that horrible feeling of the pain of the disparity between my aspiration and my actuality. And of course, in those experiences, you know, there's a wonderful feeling of the beginning of some greater integration. It's painful, but there's a greater kind of coming together in you. There's a feeling even of purification. Almost as if, you know, being engaged in the Dharma in that way and engaged in life so fully, that sort of brings things up to be purified, bring things out, brings, if you like, the poison of one's, you know, one's inner poison drives, as one translator puts it, kind of brings it up into consciousness.